Okay, so we will begin the Q&A session. I've got a few questions. We have one question from the group today who came here in person. How do you avoid falling in the trap of caring about something / someone too much and becoming attached to that something someone at the same time? I think one of the classic standards is to pay attention to the sense of dukkha, and that sense of suffering, dis-ease that comes about. Because it's, and it's important to sort of recognize that the Buddha is not advocating not caring about anything, or that equanimity means indifference. Those are misapprehensions of the purpose of the Buddhist teachings. There's obviously a caring about things that is really important. I mean, it's just like the aspect of, say, loving kindness, compassion. Those are attitudes of caring that are central to the Buddhist teachings, but they're also, they have to be balanced with a sense of perspective and kind of non-entanglement. It's with that non-entanglement that one can really care for, have kindness, have compassion, and so that it doesn't come back and bite one. So it's really paying attention to the element of say dis-ease, complication that can so easily arise in that sense of caring about something in terms of some principle or some ideal. Or someone in terms of people in our persons in our lives, and also like just the aspect of you know, one of the fundamental principles is generosity, and generosity is giving. So that giving oneself to situations, giving oneself to principles, giving oneself to people, giving oneself to things that are going to bring benefit, so that one has to give oneself. It's not, generosity is not just sort of writing a check or something. It's not a material thing. Sometimes it can involve material things, but it's much more an attitude of mind, attitude of heart, so that that sense of yeah, giving, sharing, paying attention, one cares about things. But you have to be recognizing, is this creating suffering or not? Is this a part of the process of freeing the heart from suffering? So that also the like one of the sets of dhammas that the Buddha gives, these that are really part of the if say they're part of the sets of teachings that the Buddha gives that are called the kind of the wings to awakening, Bodhipakkhya Dhammas, sort of that the four bases of success, and the first is a sense of in the Pali is chanda. Chanda is desire, and so oftentimes using and desire in the sense of interest, desire in the sense of motivation, desire in the sense of caring about. If you don't have that kind of interest and desire and caring about something, you don't put effort, because that's the next quality as a base of success. There's four bases of chanda, wirya, citta, vimamsa. Chanda is desire, wirya is effort, citta is application of mind, vimamsa is reviewing, reflecting, investigating. And those lead to spiritual success, they lead to material success. So that one has to, care about. But if it's, if one's too entangled, if there's too much self involved, too much me involved in it, then it'll get, it gets complicated really quickly. There's too much investment in terms of I need to have it, an outcome that is aligns with my preferences. That's going to create problems. There's going to be suffering. So it's just paying attention to dukkha, and not in the sense of isn't this so miserable, but it's more like, oh, look at that! I care about this, and I want to see this come about in a good way. But I'm getting so invested in it that it's making excessive complications and difficulty. So it's being able to reflect and investigate. So that sense of being willing to acknowledge and adjust. How do I bring about a more... because the Buddha, when the Buddha says, say, the source of suffering is desire, that is true, but it's a specific word, tanha, and it's desire that always has greed, hatred, delusion. It always has the entanglement of self. So it ends up in suffering. When the Buddha says, "You need to, if you were looking for spiritual success and well-being." It's based on principles. First principle is desire. It's a different word, chanda. It's that sense of chanda, a sense of motivation, of interest, of engaging skillfully. So that being able, and sometimes it's qualified into like dhamma chanda. Desire for the Dhamma, kusala chanda, a desire for the wholesome, or desire that is based in the wholesome. So it's those are two different kinds of desire and two different kinds of results. So that, but in terms of how does one avoid falling into that trap, one has to be alert and attentive to how these different forces of desire work in the mind, and how do we support skillful, like lifting up skillful desire, rather than thinking, oh, if I just, you know, I'm just don't, if I don't, if I don't get involved enough and I shut down as much as I can, then everything's going to be okay. It's nothing's going to hurt me. Well, no, it's not how it works. That's kind of painful way to live as well. So it's recognizing these balances. Okay, so then the next, go to the questions that came in the from the online people who are plugged in. How do we overcome regret and remorse associated with not being able to do good or meet our loved ones at the time of passing away? Especially during these days, I'm not sure what the situation is. And certainly that's a huge source of painful experience of this pandemic. Many people have not been able to say their goodbyes to their relatives and loved ones. It's painful. But I think one of the things is being able to separate out between the... Because it's one thing to have regret and remorse over something that you've been actively stupid about. You know? It's another when it's out of one's control, and then if you just keep going round and around and around with something that is, was completely out of one's control, then that's a fruitless engaging of the mind. And of course, there may be any number of things that not being able to meet loved ones. It just may be a sense of circumstance where one is. These days, we're distant from many of our close relatives, friends, loved ones, just by the nature of the society, and sometimes it's we're just too far away to be able to act on that or to fulfill that. A lot of it is looking how much are we have been engaged, and then even if we have been unable to be present, we can still bring to mind the option of directing our attention to loving kindness and a sense of well-wishing and a sense of a dedication of blessings, that, like really trying to bring to mind the good of people and good connection that we may have had, and dedicating blessings for their well-being. Those are things that can all be done. And so often the mind just seems to want to go back to regret and remorse, and so much of that is just one's own kind of obsession of self. There are skillful uses of regret and remorse in the sense of acknowledging something unskillful or inappropriate that one's done, and then making a resolution to change because of that regret, remorse. That's a skillful use of it. Just going, continually going back to it kind of torturing oneself with regret and remorse is an unskillful application of the mind. That doesn't accomplish much. So it's like really learning how to take that. Okay, that, you know, I wish I'd have done it differently, and actually make a resolution to do something different, make a difference in your life, make a change in your life, and that's a really skillful use of regret and remorse. So that it's really of for one's own benefit and for the benefit of others, and that's that we always have that choice or that opportunity. So to recollect that and to encourage oneself in that direction. Okay, the second question. I struggle to find meaning in life. I don't want to find, in capital, the meaning of life, but just find more purpose, sense of feeling that what I do matters. I don't know what to do with my life as I am currently sick and will need to change how I live from now on, but right now I feel lost. I struggle to find what to do during my days and what to do in the future in terms of career or lifestyle. It was easier when I had routines and didn't have to think about what to do, yet I was not necessarily very happy. And in brackets, I actually felt quite depressed sometimes. What would be your advice to someone who feels lost as to what to do next in his or her life? I think it's kind of similar in that sense of recognizing that okay, I'm feeling kind of adrift right now, feeling not quite sure what direction to be taking, and acknowledging that, and then putting forth some effort in terms of well, this seems to be a good way to go forth, to go forward, and because sometimes you don't have to find meaning in life to actually do something good. You already know what something good is already. Put the energy into that, and a certain clarity starts to come from that. If you want to figure it all out ahead of time, good luck. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's helpful to go ahead and recognize the fact that I mean this is a question that is coming from somebody who is plugging in online. It's good to recognize the reality is you're already making choices to do something good. If you have plugged into 25th anniversary of Abhayagiri to join that, I mean, you're already making choices that have some meaning and purpose. Given the what options one has when one turns on the internet, the fact that you've plugged into the 25th commemoration of Abhayagiri, I mean, that's you're already actually a fairly rare segment of the population that's looking for meaning. There's a lot more distracting, interesting, fascinating things to be clicking on, and this is what you chose. So also give yourself some credit and don't get too tangled up in having some kind of grand purpose, but recognizing that there are certain choices we can make each single day that incline us to generosity, to virtue, to being aware and mindful that do reflect on the nature of actions and the results of actions, and the nature of the causes and results of well-being and happiness. So it's just as we direct our attention more, that gains momentum, it gains energy, and some clarity inevitably results from that. The next question. I struggle with restlessness. I always want to be doing something, and I often end up doing several things at the same time, so it's draining and not enjoyable. It's very difficult to stop, and when I stop, I don't know what to do, so I might grab my iPhone, clean stuff around, etc. I feel that we're always doing something, are we? Not sure what my question is, but could you talk about restlessness and how to do nothing, if that's actually possible? Well, the problem is that restlessness in the sense of that kind of, I'm dissatisfied here, if I go over there, that's going to make me a bit happier. I'm not so satisfied with this. If I get that, if I do that, then that's going to make me, if not happy, at least it'll be something that other than what I'm experiencing now. So that just recognizing that constant moving to try to gain some kind of gratification, satisfaction in some way, shape, or form. I think one of the things is just being willing to just stop, even if it's just moment to moment, just a sense of stopping and saying, what am I missing right now? What am I lacking right now? And of course the mind will conjure up all sorts of things, but it's sort of, no, what's the actual feeling? And to pay attention to that impulse and recognize that as we can I just be with that feeling of lack just for a minute? And can I just be with the simplicity of this moment, this circumstance, and not be projecting away, and what would I be missing or lacking in this? So it's like it's an exercise in just being able to relax into this present moment and realize that it's actually safe to be in this present moment, in this present experience, in this particular mental configuration, physical configuration that we have right here. And so, oh yeah, okay. And it's just, and of course, the habits of mind are going to pull one out, but it's more like that conscious remembering, conscious recollection, conscious returning, that one gains a sense of increased confidence in oneself. Because the restlessness is always kind of driving us, is sort of pushing behind, and just to be able to relax into that and say, well, okay, that restlessness is also, that's not such a sure thing. That doesn't have to drive me all the time. That arises and it passes away. It's like a wave that crests and falls. I can be with that, and then when it all through that, just that experience, there can be a sense of clarity and ease, and that helps to. I mean, the mind is going to do what the mind does, but we can be present with it. Okay, fourth question. Why do we forget past lives? Well, I think it's a skillful evolutionary process that recognizes that even if we have... I mean, it's bad enough remembering what we've done in this life. Then having to remember past lives as well. It's just, I mean, think of the complication. How much complication we do, just what we remember from this life. And then if we had to do past lives, gosh, I mean, that's just too much. So... I think it's a skillful evolutionary process that gives us a kind of a leg up on seeking for peace and well-being. Fifth question. A question about Dogen Zenji's teaching. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. No trace of enlightenment remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. Can you reflect on this teaching from the Theravada Thai Forest teachings? I think Zen Master Dogen is kind of the master of enigmatic kind of phrases and teachings, but this in and oftentimes, and say like Ajahn Chah and many other of the great forest masters, they're sometimes try to do is turn teachings on their head a little bit, or give a little bit of a twist or an angle because what happens in, I'm going to say what happens in religious teachings, but it happens in all forms of knowledge. We just get used to something and either expressing it or thinking about things in a certain way, and then we just keep plodding along that same track. And we never really get a fresh insight into it. So that particularly studying Buddhism, then it's important, that's the whole aspect of insight, is having a fresh insight into our human experience. And particularly in this teaching, say Dogen is pointing to the nature of self. Say to study the Buddha way is to study the self. And to study the Buddha way is to study the, say, Four Noble Truths, study dukkha, study the self is forget the self, the whole teaching of not self. That's when the Buddha speaks of the teaching of not self, it's not a negation of self, it's recognizing that we carry around this whole identification with self, and it's a burden. And to forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. It's like Ajahn Chah saying that everything is teaching us. Everything is a manifestation of Dhamma and truth. So it's all the actualized by myriad things. When we are able to relinquish or drop the whole self program, then everything really is pointing out truth to us all the time. And it's Ajahn Chah, forest masters have all sort of pointed to that. And say, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. That's very much when you think of the very first insight into, into truth, or very first fetter that falls away, is sakkaya ditti, identification with body and mind, identification with the five khandhas as being self, form, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness, as being self, belonging to self, and that drops away, and one realizes that one is not the whole aspect of one's own being, as well as all beings, didn't really have an enduring essence at all. Never had, never will. And everything falls away. It doesn't mean that's a negation. It's putting things into perspective so one isn't locking people into, and the world into, some objective identity, and one is not locking oneself into an objective identity. One can respond with awareness, clarity, wisdom, and discernment, because that's all that remains. And sort of that this no trace continues endlessly. And that's the that no trace, that sense of there is, rather than being that fixating on thingness and otherness, and solidifying or reifying experience, it arises and ceases, and one sees things in their true nature, and it doesn't negate. That is where we can respond with real wisdom. We can respond with real compassion. And so that's. So I don't see any. The essence of teachings that point to a liberating insight tend to have a similarity to them. Okay, the sixth. Okay, this is just a comment. It's wonderful to see and hear Ajahn Sudhanto again. I miss him so much. Thank you for the appearance. Felt like a real gift. Seven, I'm lucky not to have any obligations, such as taking care of a family, making money, working, etc. But I don't know what to do with my life, as if obligations were what gave life meaning, or at least what helped guide my life. Always wondering what to do with my life next is a bit tough. How would you suggest I approach a situation where I could do many things, yet I don't know what to do? How do you figure out what to do with your life when you have too much freedom? Not sure if freedom is the appropriate word to use here. Thank you. It is in the Western sense of it, and particularly the American sense, because freedom is kind of like the ability to make your own choices. And yes, I mean, people bind themselves with their own choices, and it's not so much freedom. But I think this question was answered from that previous one, the second one about, say, struggling to find meaning in life. But I think that just recognizing that, you know, we can make choices that are skillful. We can make choices that are based on what is skillful, what's beneficial. And it's those skillful choices that bring a certain satisfaction. And also, you know, sometimes people are so bound up with themselves that I think it's helpful to be engaging in some kind of service or giving or sharing or doing something that connects one with other human beings. We get so tangled up in ourselves that it's it weighs us down. Okay, the eighth question. In our worldly life, we always have expectation on things that we do. What will be the best way for us to change this habit and do everything without any expectation? I think it's not that we don't have expectations, but I think we, Ajahn Yaniko, organized this 25th anniversary practice session, and there's kind of an expectation that it would be beneficial, and there's certainly hope that that'd be the case, but it's also being able to hold it, say, in parallel with the fact that, not a sure thing. Never quite sure what it's, how it's going to turn out. I mean, I think it's turned out wonderfully, but it's not a sure thing. So being able to hold that uncertainty with it, so that expectation is. Because we need to be able, in the same way that I was talking about that set of teachings that the Buddha gave, that the basis of spiritual, material success begins with desire. So there's a certain desire, expectation, but it's more like motivation or interest. And when it's rooted in a, say, wholesome, skillful, to a certain degree, unselfish motivation, it'll tend to have a good result. It's how the world works. It may or may not. I mean, there's many factors that are going to happen, that are going to be factored in, but in general, I think one of the things is not tying oneself too tightly with some concrete result, but being able to pay attention to the process of our intention, the process of our effort, the process of our kind of taking an interest and monitoring how it's playing out, how's it working. And when we do that, then we can we can actually take a lot more interest in it and bring more skillful desire to it rather than tethering it to some concrete, solid expectation. And so being able to recognize, it's kind of interesting adventure we're on, this human life, and take it from there. Last question is, does Lumpopasano know what happened to Ajahn Visuddhi or Christine Lee? I think Christine might be in Thailand. Thank you. I wasn't sure where Christine was. These are, for people who don't know, they were here. Ajahn Visuddhi was along with Anagarika Tom, Ajahn Grundamo, and Ajahn Amaro were the first people, and then Christine showed up very soon after the and stayed here for many months. So, I've lost touch with her a long time ago. Ajahn Visuddhi left the Rome's 15?
It was just before our 10th. It was just because we brought him back for our
10th. Ah, okay.
So yeah, it would have been 15 years ago.
About 15 years ago. He left the robes about 15 years ago, and then he's been living in London, and from time to time they hear from him at Amaravati, so he is still around. And that's the end of the questions, and that's 4:30. So.